If you'll notice, I changed the title on my outline from what it is in the notebook. I'm going to work on this outline mainly. I'll refer to this other stuff, but the outline. An alternative to the traditional Sunday school, because I'm going to share with you what I've done. And perhaps through what I've done, may give you some ideas of some things you could do in your own personal situation. At least stretch your imagination to the fact that you don't have to do the way it's always been done. But there are some options open to you. And perhaps you want to do what I've done, but maybe you don't want to. Maybe you can't. So that's why I want to emphasize that I've changed this to an alternative. I'm not going to give you a whole list of all kinds of things you can do with your Sunday school, because I don't know all the alternatives. I do know one alternative, and that's something I've worked on real hard. Let me give you a little bit of background how I got to where I am today in this curriculum. When I came to our church 4 years ago, I grew up in a Southern Baptist church and was not real active through college or seminary. When I was in seminary, we attended regularly, but not really in a leadership role in the church. I worked on camp, on a high school campus, doing touch ministry, and we had a joy explosion, discipleship groups, and things like that. But it wasn't through the church, I just went out and did it, my wife and we just did it all because we wanted to do it. So we were not real in depth into a church ministry. And so when I came to our church, I kind of had the philosophy that, Sunday school is such a waste. My time is more valuable than spending time with Sunday school. And so I kind of left that up. We had a minister of education. He can handle the Sunday school. And I'm going to get into, doing the discipleship and the touch ministry and joy exposure. We're going to do all this stuff and let the Sunday school just exist. It's there, and I don't think it's going to go away, but just let it happen. So I went on for a year or two like that and realized very vividly that Sunday school is not going to go away. It's going to be there. No matter how long, other things last, Sunday school is going to last. Heaven and earth may pass away, but Sunday school will not. So I started thinking through, well, what are we producing out of our churches? We've had kids that went to Sunday school all their lives and got to college and just totally bombed out of the Christian life. How did that happen? What happened that 1 hour Sunday morning that they, can you think of hundreds, maybe thousands of hours of kids had spent in that church building and then just totally tubed out and went to college? And you and I might have had some of that same experience. I got a lot of my growth organizations outside the church. A lot that I learned about taught me, whether it was a youth program there was in my high school or campus crusade or intervarsity or whatever. We've grown a lot outside of church. Why is that when we have so many hours spent in that church building, yet nothing of value is done, or very little it seems? So I was concerned about that. I was concerned that the kids get off to college and just totally tube out. I just don't know what to, how to answer the accusations of professors or other students. So it was a real concern of mine. I also got to looking just at the realistic fact that, why should we waste this time? This 1 hour on Sunday morning, what are we doing? What are we doing with it? And so I just was kind of evaluating that. So about, 2.5 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, I can't recall exactly how it happened, I started thinking of some ideas. Maybe we could go ahead and change the whole structure of the Sunday school. Let's do something different. Let's get something of value in there to the kids on Sunday morning. And that what they're doing would be significant. And rather than just coming and sit around and half the kids don't study, if they study, the material is not that great anyway. And so just kind of look at the whole structure, from the teachers, the material, the students, everything. And so I presented this thought to my pastor, and much to my surprise, he had been thinking along the same lines. Let's do something different with the Sunday school, and let's prepare the kids for college. And so our basic philosophy was the same. Now his philosophy on it, and I'll give you another alternative right here. His philosophy was different than mine, though. What he really wanted to do was to have like a large group, get the kids maybe together in one big group, have 100 kids or something like that. And I would teach them some basic things, you know, apologetics or Christian ethics or things like that. And I would do an lecture type approach, maybe have small groups during that time. But I would be the teacher and get across some real good material. And I just couldn't do. In my time-wise, I teach college Sunday school class, and I really like doing that. I couldn't see leaving that. And also, it just doesn't jive with my methodology, you know, to keep it to a smaller, more intimate level. So, about the same time, my minister of education, which is very interesting, handed me a thing. I don't even know if I brought it. I might have brought it with me. A thing he picked up, and he doesn't even know where he got it. Some of you might have done it. I don't know. At some convention somewhere. Yeah, here it is. That somebody had done senior high curriculum. And again, Mr. Education, there's no name on it, but he just had picked it up at some conference. And there they had something similar to the curriculum I've given you, with three courses, each grade, and just different things that they were touching on in these three, 10th, 11th, and 12th grades. So anyway, this kind of sparked my mind, and that my Minister of Education was all for us doing something different if we wanted to. He wasn't pushing it or trying to stop it. But so all this was coming together. And I'm going to go through a little bit later how exactly it came about. But what we've come down to is a whole new Sunday school curriculum for the 10th, 11th, and 12th grades, which we are now involved in. We started last year, a year ago, with just our 12th grade. And now we've got 10th, 11th, and 12th grade involved in it. And so we've had time to look at it, to evaluate it, and see what we're doing. So let me... one other thing I have on my notes here to do, to mention, is my attitude toward the Sunday school. I really feel and that we as youth ministers need to be involved in what's happening in that Sunday school hour. Rather than my erroneous attitude, you know, well, I'm just going to stay away from that because it's not any good anyway. But you need, because there's a lot of your kids involved in that, and you could be ruining some kids by allowing some things to go on to you in your Sunday school that are happening. So, anyway, that's kind of a little background. So how do you go about starting or giving developing an alternative to your Sunday school? And the first thing I mentioned here is to develop a philosophy of Christian education. Now, this is basically what I've come down to, and I have not worked out this in long detail and labored over it for hours. I've mainly put this kind of down for this seminar. And so it's not anything, a full-blown philosophy that I put together. But these are some of the basic tenets that I believe needs to happen in the Christian education. The first thing is that it be based on the commitment to the Lordship of Jesus Christ. Both the student and the teacher. This kind of goes along with the whole reach-out strategy of the Lordship of Christ being over all that we're doing and in all and through all. And the same thing with our Christian education. We need... our students, before they're really going to learn and be their minds be illumined by the Holy Spirit, they need to be Christians and have this commitment to the Lord Jesus Christ. And they are and need to be in the Sunday school because of their commitment to Christ. Now, I know that's very idealistic, but there's not going to be Christian education until the kids are there because of a commitment. If it's they're just there because they've always been there because their parents bring them, they're not there for the education. But they're there because of their love for Christ and wanting to serve Him and know more about Him, then education is possible. The same thing with the teacher. It's very obvious. The one who's going to be leading needs to have an in-depth life with Christ and relationship to Him. And so they need to have this relationship also. Same thing, it needs to be based on a commitment to learn. One thing that has bothered me and... I don't know that I've personally worked through all this in my life, but there seems to be a real inability on the part of most of our young people today, not especially in the church, but not necessarily only in the church, but an inability to think, to be able to think on their own, to reason, to come to their own conclusions, you know, to ask them a question and the only answer they might have is, I don't know, or just to be blank. But to be able to think through some things and be willing to make themselves vulnerable almost to the fact that the point is of saying something that could be wrong. And so the kids and the students, the whole philosophy of education needs to be on a commitment that they are going to learn something. They're there to learn. And so this, I think, is one of the major things we need to look at is learning to think. And our Christian education process needs to be involved in that and teaching the kids how to think. The third thing is that the learning experience needs to be a challenge. One thing I found out just a couple weeks ago, talking to someone who we had in our church for a special Bible conference thing, he has written materials for the Sunday School Board. Found out that all the materials in the Sunday School Board, adult level, or all the adult materials at least, are written on an 8th grade level. Kind of about the level of Reader's Digest type material. They had tried some series of making it a little more tougher, but found out that people wouldn't buy it. So they've gone everything, at least the adult stuff, is on an 8th grade level. And they're real strict with their writers on making sure it's down low enough level for across the whole convention. So if they're doing that on an 8th grade level, you know, what are they? I don't know exactly what they're doing with the high school and the junior high school. I wouldn't know how to evaluate what level it is on. But anyway, this is how our material is written, and it's not really a challenge to some of the people. Some of the people, it might be a challenge. But to others, it's no challenge, and therefore, when there's no challenge, it creates boredom and a real apathy. And why even study it if there's really no challenge to it? So I think our education process needs to be something that confronts us, to challenge us. I know the times I've learned the most might be with professors that I disagreed with the most, because I was challenged in my thoughts and was able to really deal with them. That's one thing why I really like the Wittenberg Door. There's things in there I just totally disagree with, but they challenge me, and I have to really think and work through them to understand them, and it is a challenge to my thought processes. So we really need to make our my own personal opinions, we need to make them a challenge to the kids. A fourth thing that I think is a part of a philosophy of Christian education is that the students need to learn by discovery. We need to be able to trust the students with dealing with some issues on their own. So many times we have to have everything wrapped up real neatly, you know, at the end of the hour together. And so all the questions are answered. There's nothing left hanging. And everything is all clear. And you and I know life isn't like that. I mean, everything is not all clear. There are some questions that are left hanging, yours and my life, in that we present sometimes that there's no problem. Everything's solved, you know. There's no questions left hanging. But we sometimes need to be able to leave the student and let them hang with something. Maybe, you know, they're dealing with something in a Sunday school class and you just don't have time, or they are so engrossed in it that maybe you can leave them with it for a week and let them deal with it for a while. But and let their own discovery come in learning. Now, one thing that how this has kind of come out and what I've done here is have reading and also writing that they must do. In other words, it's kind of a held accountable thing. And the writing, the questions encourage them to deal with material. It's not just, you know, on page 42 it talks about Jesus' mother. What was her name? You know, it's not just, you know, regurgitation of what is there. But it's a thought process is what I really try to incorporate in the materials we use. Is there's the kids need to be involved in the thought. Another thing related to that is the lecture approach kills discovery. And here I am lecturing to you and everything, but hopefully you're being challenged, you know, and all of you are intelligent college graduates and everything. Work through all these hang-ups. So you're there thinking, but so I can do it for you. But the typical approach, you know, in a lot of our Sunday schools is lecture. And it's one way. You know, I got the resources. Here you go. Here it comes, you know. And the kids aren't involved in it at all. And they just sit there and sit there and sit there. And they sit there for 18 years of their church life. And then go out to the college campus and somebody asks them a question. It's the first question they've ever had asked to them. And they can't handle it. They can't remember what their Sunday school teacher said. But if your teacher is there, and probably a lot of you like to use small groups and discussion type thing, if your teacher's there giving discussion, you know, and asking them, you know, well, you know, what do you think about the resurrection? How do you really know Christ rose from the dead? And the teacher, in a Christian atmosphere, is confronting the student, and allowing them to discover the answers on their own, I think is much more healthy than them having to learn to think on a college campus or in marriage or whatever, when they could have been taught to think and encouraged to think and demanded thinking by the teachers in this discovery. Fifth thing is the quality of the teacher is as important as the material. And this has been emphasized over and over again with discipleship. It's not just material. And what I've worked on doing with my Sunday school stuff is not just to get some new material in their hands, not just to get new structure, but get some new lives. And not necessarily that I changed my teachers. As a matter of fact, most of my teachers that I'm using in this new area were the same ones that were teaching. But to spend more time with them, to have more input into their lives, to give higher demands of them, that we're doing some study along outside of the material that they're using for Sunday school, and expecting things of them, and holding them accountable to some things. So, but the quality of teacher, and I'm sure you always agree with this, is as important, if not more important, than the teacher themselves. And it goes along with the idea of building relationship with the kids, and that the kids can see there's a quality in this person's life that I would like to have in my life. And if there's no quality there, then the kids aren't going to respond in that way. Any comments on philosophy? Maybe some of you would like to throw in something of your own of a philosophy that you really think is important in Christian education. Bob?
Hank, you mentioned on 4B, learning by discovery.
Yeah.
The idea of reading and writing in this computer, accountability and so forth.
Yeah.
How do you really make that functional in a Sunday school situation where obviously you've got a diluted situation? Kids are motivated to be there, some couldn't care less, but they have to be there. How do you hold them accountable to actually do what you've asked them to do?
The only real way we hold them accountable is just to go over that material each Sunday. We haven't got to the point of having commitments and that they have to do this to be involved in the Sunday school. And I think it's a little accommodation to what Ralph Neighbor was talking about yesterday, of allowing room for the traditionalists. You know, if there's a traditionalist kid who just wants to come and sit and not do any work, then they can still come and, in one sense, feel a part of, but in another sense, because they haven't done the work, be left out.
I was just thinking, as you mentioned that, would it be a feasible thing, just in terms of what you've experienced, to maybe have the traditional class along with the class that covers special material that would be more interesting and allow the kids to make a move?
Yeah.
As far as
that would be, yes, I think that would be feasible, and we might even go with that in the future. It's just that in getting all this started, I would have had a hard time keeping my hand on something else and staffing it and things like that, that we very well could go to that and give the kids an option of what they wanted to do and what they wanted to be in Sunday school. It would present a space problem to us, too, to have another class. Lynn?
I'm just wondering, your philosophy of Christian education, of course, the traditional thinking there is a lot of outreach, a lot of evangelism, understanding, and getting folks in the coming to our Sunday school.
Mm-hmm.
As the word is taught, Jesus and that kind of thing. Is that included in your philosophy? Do you see that type of Christian education just for Christian?
Primarily. Not just, though. I think it could, and we do have some non-Christian kids in the classes. But it's not just only, or it's not, I don't see it as an evangelistic arm as a lot of, you know, the big religious education people would say, you know, this is the evangelistic arm of the church. We do have prospects, you know, that our teachers get, and new members of the church, the teachers get to see and follow the call and things like that. We do have some evangelistic stuff put in there. But there's probably something that needs to be strengthened in our own philosophy here, but we've just been working so hard on getting material and this new structure that we haven't gone so much into the outreach type thing. So, I don't know if I've answered your question. It's just I haven't worked it out that much.
Is this your first year? Second year. What place of the 1B there, based on the words that you described by speaking to the group of the way, and how are the kids that are kind of made up of the community?
Okay. They,
it's kind of along, but, you know, they're getting brought along a lot.
Yeah, it's just kind of like what they are now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's making the needs of the ones that are willing to make, like,
right.
That.
Right. Yeah, now see, some classes, psychology of class is very interesting. Because some of these classes, when the material is basically the same type of thing, you know, the kids are really into it, you know, and most of them come with their work done, and they get into good discussion. Some classes, kids are hard doing, none of them are hard doing any work, and it's kind of contagious, you know, both of it's kind of contagious. And so it kind of depends, you know, which group, and you know, we switch the groups around every trimester and stuff like that. It's just, it's really interesting, but... So when I get a class where they're all not doing the work, and most of them are not doing the work, and it's very tough for this type of thing to work. But the accountability thing kind of works in the peer pressure type of accountability. Bill?
Well, plus the fact with the type of material that you're covering, the sexuality, the peer pressure, the politics, all that kind of thing, that's where the young people are. And I want you to take by Howard Henderson. He said that the main thought in Sunday school is all over the world is the fact that the teachers weren't answering the questions the kids were asking or scratching where they were itching.
Right.
And in dealing with the young people in my church, I've been there for 2 months now, the first thing I did was give them a survey and list 50 topics.
Right.
And said, list in order of 1 to 10, those things that you would most like to talk about or discuss at one point in time or another. And I was going to use that for my Wednesday night kind of discussion Bible study thing. It turned out that out of the top 15, there were maybe 25 that had to do with spiritual qualities, like knowing God's will, how to be sure you're a Christian, various things like that, prayer, Bible study, and the other 25 were things like understanding yourself, self-acceptance, peer pressure, dating, sex, hoping for death. I had to remember those 1 to 10. The only one that had anything to do with Christianity per se was the second one, in the order of the top 15, and that was how to be sure you're a Christian.
Great.
Which really pointed out to me that most of them don't really know what's going on.
Okay.
And so we've had to go back and start dealing with these areas, like helping them to understand themselves first, dealing with peer pressure, dealing with their problems, and showing them how the Bible relates to all that. And when they come to a firm grasp of that, then the whole idea of what a Christian is and how God works in their lives and what the Lordship of Christ can mean in their life, once they've grasped all those things, they see how it all fits together. Then the kids are really motivated. So the material that Hank's got listed, I kind of glanced over the other page too, that's where the young people are. And whether or not they're coming just because they have to come, or even if they read the material or not that they're given, it's where they are. And that's going to generate more interest, or they're going to let you know it or not.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Bill. According to a recent survey by Bill Callenberg, most kids want to know other things. Okay, thank you. That was for the tape. I just summed it all up. Good. I'm going to suggest to do that survey later, which is something I didn't do in putting this stuff together, which I wish I had done, but I appreciate that. Okay, evaluate the current situation. Let's kind of move on here for a little bit. Again, this was a situation in my church. Your church might have been different, and this is just where I was and what's happened. Let me just quote, not verbatim, but just generally, Elizabeth O'Connor had an interview in Faith at Work magazine very recently, and she's on staff at Church of the Savior in D.C. And one question, well, I don't remember the question, but her response was, we do a lot of preaching about how things need to be changed or how we need to be better Christians, or in this case, how the Sunday school really needs to be meeting the needs of people and needs to be that basic Bible study area of our church. But she didn't say all that. I kind of added that stuff in. But she says, we do a lot of preaching about renewal and spiritual life and things like that, but yet there are no structures for it. We don't make the structure to incorporate what we're preaching or talking about. And so I was looking at, you know, I talk about it, and I hear the church talk about it, hear your education directors talk about, you know, Sunday school, to meet the needs of people, to be that small, close, intimate community fellowship, to educate our people, things like that, and yet it wasn't really doing that. So I got to think about the whole structure, and here's what I found in my situation. I'll just run over these. I kind of hinted at some of these already. One was there's just little expectancy or excitement about Sunday school. I mean, it was just there, and it was kind of my attitude too. Well, it's there. You know, there's not much we can do about it, and they weren't coming there excited to study. interested in studying their lesson. The teacher was not that fired up about studying and getting really prepared ahead of time. Some of them were. And maybe your situation is different. Maybe you've been able to motivate your teachers a lot more. But I didn't take the time to work with the teachers that much. I didn't try to work in the same old structure and changing that. Using the whole old structure format. But there's just little excitement about the Sunday school situation. Teachers and students both. I saw as the main goal of that time was just, the goal was just to fill up that hour on Sunday morning. What can we do? You know? Well, first off, we don't start on time because that'll keep us from having to do something for 15 minutes. So we start at 10 o'clock. That only is 45 minutes. Then we mess around assembly a little bit of time, you know, and we have that and get to the classes maybe 10:15. Of course, you got to do records then, so that's about another 5 or 10 minutes. And that leaves us good 20 minutes for a lesson, you know, so you can read that lesson in 20 minutes. So anyway, you know, basically, and nobody ever verbalized that, but almost that's what your philosophy ends up being, is just let's fill up that hour with whatever we can do, and with no thought as to what direction it's going in, what it's doing for the kids, what it's doing to you, and what it's doing to your church. And so just to fill up that hour. Third thing, which I've already alluded to, was the dogmatic approach. The fact that the teacher must be right, I've got the answers, little freedom to question things, to ask questions of the teachers, and the teachers be willing to say, I don't really know. But a real dogmatic lecture type approach was the dominant theme in our Sunday school. And finally, we've always done it this way before. We've always had assemblies. We've always had segregated classrooms, guys and girls. We've always used the quarterlies. I didn't ask anybody these questions, but I didn't know anybody that had raised the questions of whether we should be doing that, whether we should be doing assemblies and segregating the classes, and whether we should have used the quarterlies, or is there other material we can use. There's been no critical evaluation of the Sunday school. I'm really looking at it. Now, you might evaluate your Sunday school, and what you're doing right now might be the best thing you could do for it. And if that's so, well, at least you faced it, and you dealt with it. But this, my situation, it wasn't. So I saw a real need to go to something else. Let me go on a little bit here, because I think we kind of talked about some of that already. Toward a new approach. Before you get into this, you really need to count the costs and the benefits of changing your Sunday school structure. And in terms of time, to doing what I'm doing takes an enormous amount of time. This fall, when I'm turning out these materials, and this summer when I was turning them out, it engulfs almost my whole study time during the week. Is to get these materials and work on these materials and to do them right. I wanted to do them because I wanted to be in control of what we're doing. I let my teachers do some of the work, and I've had to come back and redo a lot of it. So there is an enormous amount of time that's going to be involved.
You were writing the lesson plans?
Writing lesson plans. I write questions like, for example, know why you believe, we're using that. And I've got questions for the students that they can fill out and answer the questions in the notebook. And I've got on everything we're doing with devotional life, I've got some book we're using, Essays on Prayer, and the Brother Lawrence Practice of Presence with God, and we have questions that deal with those different books. So you can imagine the time it's going to take to draw this stuff together. And that's if you're going to do it this alternative. You know, there's others, and I'm going to give you some other suggestions, ways that shortcuts, and you can save time later. But it does take a lot amount of time, and I've been doing this for 2 years now. And if you're serious about changing the whole structure, you have to look down the road, you know. And are you willing to pay the price and the commitment to do that? Is it valuable enough? Is it important? Ralph Nader says it's God in it, and when He's in it, you can do these things and see that the value. Money. I have found, and I have done a real detailed accounting study of this, but my just kind of sketch, thumbnail sketch, the cost is about the same as what your quarterlies are costing you now. And the reason is, you've got to take this into account, is many of your quarterlies are thrown away at the end of the quarter because you always order a little bit more than you actually need. So in case, you know, you have a lot of visitors, and I don't know how your church is, but our secretary that the orders, though, she kind of freaks out a little bit, you know, and wants to make sure she sees how many's on roll and she orders that many, you know. And but, you know, we got stacks of quarterlies. They're no good anymore. They're dated. Whereas these books, you use them, you know, I use them this trimester. Well, next trimester we got a stack of them left. We're going to use them again. You know, the kids are going to get them. They're going to keep them. But the value of them is the same. They're not dated. You can sell them on the side if you want to in the end, or use them for other study courses, things like that, if you don't use this kind of curriculum anymore. But if you get textbooks like this, they're not dated. So, in other words, over the long haul, the price comes out to about the same. You can pick and choose your books according to your budget, is what you can do, which I did with these. Number-wise, as far as what I mean by here, the number attending Sunday school, there's a couple ways you can look at this. So there's a large amount of kids there that we have an opportunity to minister to, that they're coming. And one question I ask, and I just cannot understand, is why so many people come to church. A lot of people say, you know, they can't understand why so many people don't come to church. Well, I don't understand why they do come. You know, you ever thought about it? They're not there. They don't want to be there. They're not putting anything into it. They're not getting anything out of it, and yet they still come. And it just baffles me, you know, that we have that many kids coming there. And yet when you ask for any type of commitment, they don't want to be involved. If there's anything further or questions you ask them, you know, about their faith, they have no idea what you're talking about. And our adults are the same way. And so, anyway, you've got this large amount of kids that are there, at least my church we did. And so let's do something of value with them rather than just writing it off as of no value at times, no value at all. So you've got a large amount of them you can minister to. Now in terms of are you going to increase your attendance or decrease it, we haven't been able to study this effectively. My hunch is, and just from kids we've talked about, it'll probably stay about the same. But what's going to happen is you might lose some and you'll gain some. You'll lose the kids that are there for no reason at all, that have just been coming because they've always come, and they are there. Maybe their parents have brought them, maybe they've come, something like that. You might lose some of those kids. You'll gain some kids that haven't come because they haven't been challenged, because they haven't learned anything, because it hasn't ministered to them. And so we're picking up some of those kids, some of your stronger kids that just saw no value in Sunday school, and we're dropping off a little bit of the ones who didn't want to put any time into it and didn't want to change, and they were really afraid of the change. So it looks like our attendance is staying about even keel. We're not, you know, it's not the action plan, and it's not going to increase your Sunday school attendance, I don't think. I really don't believe that it's going to hurt it, though. And so your pastor and your education man are going to want to know that. But you're going to have to experiment with your own situation. I don't have any detailed study on it because... for various reasons, we just don't have the records. We're not coordinated where we could check it when we went into this with the 12th grade. The battles. Now, before you do anything, you need to either have gone to Ralph's seminar yesterday on affecting change or get his tape, one or the other. And tremendous. I felt a little affirmed in doing some of the things that he was suggesting doing. And what I mean by the battles, there might be battles, then again there might not. But you need to count the cost of whether the battles are going to be worth it or not. And you might have some trouble with some deacons, or if you have an education committee, your pastor. And so one thing Ralph said, and I'll just give you a little suggestion, one thing he said was to get a theology before you develop your methodology and start getting that across to the people. And maybe you need to start sharing with your pastor, you know, your burden for Christian education and the need for us to grow up into Christ and show what's happening to kids when they hit the college campus and, you know, like the stats that Barry gave the other night. And, you know, just build up a real big case, you know, and then they say, well, your pastor said, well, what can we do? You know, and so you say, well, just happen to have, you know, a 40-page thesis here on how we can change our Sunday school. But, you know, prepare him or the deacons or your education committee, your teachers. And I was very fortunate having the blessings and the encouraging of my pastor through the whole thing. and our education man through the whole thing. They were for it, wanted me to do it, and almost have given me a free hand. Most of these materials have been developed and are currently being developed without the pastor having seen them. Because he trusts me, I let him know what I'm doing, let him know what books I'm using, and then he's allowed me to just go ahead and develop it. I did not have to report to any education committee, which we don't have. I have reported on my own volition to the deacons to let them know what's happening. I have had some questions raised by some of the deacons, and we've had some questions filtered back in. What's happening in those Sunday schools? I understand you're not using the Sunday school literature anymore, and you're not studying the Bible anymore. Why aren't you studying the Bible? And, well, all this stuff is biblical, and we're studying the Bible. We just don't have the quarterlies, you know, that have a verse in Scripture that we're studying that week. And and we also deal with some controversial subjects in our Christian ethics class. So some of these questions have come back to us, but nothing of the nature like, you know, let's stop this thing. And I had an open meeting with parents to let them know what's going on. And just a few parents showed up. I mean, it really shows how much they care what's happening in Sunday school anyway. But always be open as you're going through this to let them know. And you'll have to analyze your own situation of what you need to do. If you're going to make some changes in that, who you need to talk to, how you need to prepare them, how fast you can move, and everything like that. Okay, now let's say you counted the cost and you said, yes, it is worth going into. It's worth the battles, it's worth the time, as the benefits are going to outweigh the cost. So let's get into it. This first thing here is what Kallenberg was talking about there. Ask the students, get up some type of survey. Now, this is something I did not do in any formal form. I have a youth council of kids that I work with, and I discussed it with them, but I did not have a formal survey that I passed around to all the kids, which would have been a good thing to do, like Kallenberg did. And just list all kinds of things that you would like, or possibilities. You need to give them some ideas. Just all kinds of possibilities. Just let your mind run wild, you know. Study, you know, the problem of missionaries in the southern quarter of Santiago, Chile, you know. And put all these things on there, you know. If you have some kids that are interested in that, you know, you can may have... That might be the number one issue they're concerned about. And so, but no, just, you know, you got the idea. Make yourself a survey, pass it out to the kids, let them respond, and to a more or less degree, use what they're asking to deal with that. And also grade it, like 10th grade, 11th grade, 12th grade. So, you know, 10th graders are most concerned about these issues, so let's teach these classes at that time. 11th graders, or if you're going to go from 7th grade or whatever, you know, we're going to deal with these issues at a certain time. And but also, you need, of course, to use what you sense and what you feel God leading are some of the needs of the kids that they need to study. You know, a New Testament survey might not be one of the big things on their list, but the kids do need to have a grasp of what's in the New Testament. Doctrine, although we don't have it here, I'm planning on trying to work that into another grade, but on Christian doctrines, basic Christianity type things. This is something the kids need to grasp on. They might not choose it as one of their most important ones. Now, some of these things that they choose on the list might not take a whole course. You might just have one lesson on it somewhere, you know, but you deal with the issue or a couple lessons or a series or something like that. So, but get some response from the kids. Get some input. It'll make them feel more a part of it, and boy, it'll tell you a lot about what you really need to be doing and what they're dealing with and what they'd like to know. Okay, gather information. Next thing you need to do, or you can do it along with the first one. In other words, you've already started gathering information. You've got what I'm doing. Find out, talk to other people. You know, you hear at a conference, what are you doing in Sunday school? You doing anything different, anything new? What can, you know, what hints can you give me? Write your friends that are at another church. Write, you know, people you've heard about. Say, what information do you have on Sunday school? What are you doing with your Sunday school? Publishing houses, things like that. All kinds of information that you can do of all possibilities of Sunday school, Christian education that you might do, and just gather some information. And then along with this, or before it, or after, whatever, just make a brainstorm. Make yourself a list. And list everything that you could possibly think of you could do in your Sunday school. This might be mainly in your curriculum area, courses you could study and do. Could be in structure. Could be all kinds of things like that. But just let your mind run wild and put down all the things that you could possibly think of. Because after you've gathered this information, you've talked to your kids, you've talked to other people, you've made your list. All right, let's pull it all together, devise a plan. And so you need to come up with some structure, first of all. And this is my structure. You don't have to use this. You can modify it. You can do whatever. You might not even have to change structure. Maybe your need in your place is not to change structure, but to change material and train teachers. Maybe, you know, and leave the assemblies, leave the segregated classes. And that might be, you know, if you're going to have a real battle over some of this other stuff, maybe don't touch it. But anyway, this is a structure I came up with, and I'll try to give you a little bit of my reasoning for each of these things, and just let you respond to it. Co-ed classes. This is another thing, we've always done it this way, and so it facilitated several things for us, and a couple of these things in my structure deal with this one issue, and that the material that we're using is so highly specialized that I wanted our teachers who teach it to teach the same material three times during the year. In other words, like they can just kind of get into it the first trimester and work on mastering it the second trimester and really kind of have it polished up that third trimester, rather than each trimester the teachers are going to have a new material study. So in other words, rather than having a girls class for three courses and a guys class for three courses, that means you have six separate classrooms, which gives us a space problem and the materials problems and the teachers and all this stuff. I felt it was necessary, let's go ahead and combine the classes so the same teachers can teach the same material. I don't know if that made a bit of sense or not, but anyway. Yeah, we'll get into that in just a second, okay? So co-ed classes. It might not be an issue. Another weird thing we have in Macon, although it's kind of breaking down a little bit, is we have segregated schools. The guys and the girls in public schools go to different schools. They're now starting to integrate the sexes, you know, and so it's really getting liberal there. But I know that sounds weird. They have guys and girls together all the way up through ninth grade, and then they separate them when they get to 10th grade. It's a historical thing. It used to be military schools. The public schools did, and that's... And just only about 7 or 8 years ago, they got rid of military. I mean, as everybody was required to be military students, all the guys were. So they had all the guys in the military school and the girls out there. That's Macon. Okay? Any of y'all from Macon? Grew up in that? Okay. They're still down there. They haven't gotten out yet. Team teaching. Another thing that I wanted to do in this was to be able for the students to be exposed to a couple different viewpoints. And to see the teachers maybe even disagree. And the teachers question one another and hopefully encourage the students to say, you know, this isn't so cut and dried pat answer that I thought it was. And maybe I can start thinking and asking questions. Because even the teachers don't agree, you know, sometimes on some things. And so I have a team teaching situation, a man and a woman teaching each classroom. I have one exception that I have two men teaching one class because I couldn't find enough women to do... who I wanted and I felt and were willing to commit to the time that I needed. So I have two men teaching my apologetics class. I don't know if that's sexist trying to have a man and a woman in each one, you know, a quota system, you know, and all this stuff. But anyway, it is a team teaching situation. It does several things. Besides giving you two viewpoints, it also gives you a ready substitute. When your teachers have to be out, and they're going to be out, kids are going to be sick, they're going to be sick, they're going to be on vacation, this material is so highly specialized that you just can't drag in, you know, Mrs. Smith, who has taught the youth department when she was, you know, 25, and now she's 72, you know, and she just can't jump right in here and teach sexuality to the 10th graders. So, we have a team teaching situation, and like if a teacher's got to be out, they just say, you know, look, I'm going to be gone next week. Would you take, you know, take the class? And it works out great. No problem with substitutes at all. All of last year, we had, going into 12th grade, we had one Sunday where both teachers were out. I was out of three classes. the whole 52 weeks. And then one of the other teachers from one of the other classes who's already in the curriculum and knows a little bit about the structure thing was able to fill in. So, Bill, you have something on that?
Yeah. In your team teaching concept, do you have any of the teams that are helping wise?
No.
Okay.
Because of that substitution problem.
Okay. Okay. Now, let me ask you another question about the teaching thing. What kind of feedback have you got from the teachers who are teaching the same thing, three times in a row?
Well, varied. Some have wanted, when we started this new year, I gave, I was getting really big on gifts, and letting them choose what they feel called to do. And so this summer where I gave them, a list of all the classes and stuff, and what do you really sense God calling you to do? Well, I had some teachers who want to teach the same material that they taught last year. They loved it so much. Had others that didn't want to have anything to do with that material. They wanted to get to something else. It's had mixed reviews. But as they go along through the year, another problem I thought might happen is that they would not study the material. I've taught it once. I can just jump in there and just, get my old notes out and teach it again. But they really have taken the time to review their lesson, to add stuff to it. Some of them have really gone out of the way to get other tapes and books and bring in resources and bring in guest speakers. And I mean, they've got this class, and see, they're working on it all year, and if they're motivated well enough, they can really get into it.
Okay, well, most of the teachers, I suppose you handpicked them.
Yes.
Okay. Were they already familiar with basic, apologetics, things like this, or have they really learned and grown in their own spiritual life as a result of teaching?
They've really grown. And that's one thing I told the teachers in choosing. I chose them because of the quality of their lives and because of their ability to relate to kids, not because of their knowledge of the topic so much. And as they were choosing the new classes, I tried to emphasize, you might want to choose something that you really know nothing about. But the fact that you're so interested in learning is going to help the kids be interested too. In fact, you're getting into it and you're really finding out, about the Holy Spirit. And you've never really studied and taken time to really get into it in depth in your own life. And, boy, that is contagious. When a teacher's excited about coming to class and, well, wasn't that lesson neat? I've never thought of things like that before. And so that's one of the reasons why I emphasize that. Lynn?
Man, that would seem right opposite. By the end of that year, you've got, say, in the 12th grade, you've got certain people who are like expertise in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And, they're retired.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
neat. Yeah.
What is your teacher-people ratio right now? You just have one teacher for each one of the subjects?
I have two teachers for each subject.
One team for each subject?
One team for each subject, yeah. And the average attendance in most of the classes is anywhere from 8 to 10, something like that.
Which is about average size class.
Yeah.
Where would you recommend? The reason I'm asking this, somebody still needs to be kind of a caring about these kids.
Yeah, all right, this is a problem we're having.
How big can a group get with this approach?
I don't know. I don't know. I'd have to do some study. You'd have to do some study on this group dynamic stuff. Some people say 8's the maximum. You can really be a community. Some say 12. But you need to know. One problem with this type of thing is you don't have one teacher with one set of kids all year long to where the teacher ideally can build a relationship with those kids and follow them and visit with them and do things with them and stuff like that.
They're with them 4 months.
They're with them 4 months, and we haven't worked this out yet, but what we're kind of maybe thinking about doing is kind of have almost like a shepherd group, although they wouldn't ever meet, but this one teacher would have maybe six girls, one of the women teachers has six girls that she would really be responsible for, even when they're in the other classes, and try to build a personal relationship there. I'm not sure if that would work. But this is the personal relationship is a little bit not as deep, but I tell you one thing, because of the nature of the discussion type thing and the newness of it and the challenge of it, it's like, we're in this thing together. And a real community is happening in some of these classes because of the attitude of the teacher.
A lot of the kids are in the discipleship group?
Some. Not a lot.
They're getting something there.
Yeah.
The ones that aren't in the discipleship group, I would be concerned about.
Yeah.
A lot of the teachers don't go to trouble to cultivate a personal relationship anyway.
Right, right. Just because you have one teacher with our kids on you doesn't automatically get it.
Yeah.
But,
that's rare.
Yeah. Lynn?
Are these teachers teacher is going to teach them this material in God and discipleship?
No.
You have two different things.
Right. I really want them to commit themselves to this Sunday school stuff. When they're involved, I'm kind of have a leadership family with the teachers, and they're in. We're studying some other material with them. I'll talk about that in just a minute, but they're involved enough with them. Okay, I'll talk about that in just a minute.
What was their response to the initial change when you suggested it and began moving in that direction? How does that compare with their response to what they're doing now, the teacher's motivation?
The teacher's response initially? Mixed reviews again. Had some that were really excited about it. Others that I was actually recruiting to be teachers, and I try to make it as tough as possible because it's a lot more work on the teachers. Some said, no, I'm not ready for that heavy of a commitment. I'd rather not be involved in this. One man in particular, Bob Burns, I'd asked over a year ago, a year and a half ago, to teach a course that I thought he'd do a real good job in. He had some questions about even going into it, for the church to go into it, and about his involvement in it. But after the thing went for a year, he's really gotten interested in it, and he's now teaching that same course in another grade. And he almost begged me to do it. So the teachers love it. I didn't lose one teacher of the ones that were... I did lose one in Montgomery. I guess he really didn't. He really wanted to get out of town to get out of it. You know, I'm sure that's why. But all the teachers that taught him before, they were so sold. They want to be back in it again. And real good sign. I was really happy with it. And plus, they've got the experience, and I divided them up in the other departments, and they're kind of helping lead those departments, and they are troubleshooters for me in those areas. Let me go on here a little bit more. I've already talked about dialogue enough. The year and trimester, now the structure, the way I've got it, and if you come up here in the end and look at the front page, is the schedule for the whole year. And what I do is I have three trimesters, and there's 15 class sessions for each trimester. The reason, that leaves us, 15 is 45, at least 7 Sundays, okay? We got 7 Sundays left over. We use one Sunday for an introduction. They come to a new department. They kind of get a little feel for what's happening, going to be happening that year. They find out what classes they're in. They get their materials, things like that, first Sunday, okay? We have one Sunday, we do a youth Sunday thing where the kids are all involved in other teaching in other places. So that blows that Sunday for getting material across. Last year we had 16 sessions and we didn't allow anything special for Christmas or Easter. And it's kind of, you know, bad to be studying about the ecological crisis, you know, on Christmas morning and things like that. So the teachers, rather than just throwing out the lesson that should have been done, we're scheduling in a Christmas lesson and an Easter lesson. Then one Sunday we used for evaluation, to where they're going to take a little final exam and use this evaluation form you got there. And another Sunday, or two other Sundays, are used for some type of special event. We've got this one Sunday, this next Sunday coming up is going to be, and we've got a couple films coming in. For two of the departments are going to have films, another department is going to have a special speaker come in. So then we're going to have another special event later on in the year. So anyway, that's the way the year is set up. The kids take it for 15 weeks, 15 sessions, and then they rotate to, we juggle up the kids a little bit. They're in a new class with some different students. They go to a different teacher, different materials. Everything starts all over new. Does a lot of things. One is it puts a little variety into the year. If you got some dull, boring teachers, you're not going to be stuck with them all year long. You know, you're going to get somebody that's a little better. By the way, another thing a team teaching situation does is I went through my teachers. I recruited all the teachers first and then kind of tried to work on pairing them up according to what they wanted to do and what their gifts were. And also, I tried to work on their personality types. You know, the outgoing type, you know, the real happy ones, you know. I put with some of the more reserved people who are not really, might not be as good at teachers, but, you know, try to match them up to where there's some lively person in that classroom each Sunday. Maybe the one is not so lively, might have a lot of wisdom, a lot of resources, a lot of knowledge. So, you know, try to balance them off. But anyway, the trimester allows you have new teachers, and the kids are, you know, the excitement of being with someone new, and just the excitement of getting into a new course. Maybe the course you have is not so exciting, and as exciting as some of the other courses. So you're not going to be stuck with this all year. You know, it's like you know, at school or college you went to. I know I was on a semester system my first year at the University of Florida, and boy, you're stuck with that thing, you know, for 16 weeks, and then we went to a quarter system, which went down to a 10-week thing, and it was, you know, you're excited to start about every quarter rather than just starting twice a year. You get three starts a year, and that's what it is. This, you know how your Sunday schools are in September, whenever you start, September or October. You know, people are kind of excited about it, you know, new class, new students, and all this type of thing, and that lasts for a couple of weeks. Well, this way, it's still, you know, we still have a little decline in the excitement, but again, you're switching it, you know. Come January, we're going to switch again, and May, we're going to switch again, and so you have a little bit more possibility for excitement in there by dividing up your year and the trimesters. Now, the reason I didn't go to quarters, it would just take, it worked out just real good for the three classes that have three trimesters. Otherwise, I had to come up with four classes and cut them way back to just a little over, about 11 weeks maybe. And I didn't feel we could get the material covered in that much time. We had a space problem for doing all the classes and stuff like that. So anyway, the trimesters worked out best for my situation. No assembly times. We do have those special event times, and the Christmas lesson, the Easter lesson will be a type of thing to do all together. It might be a role play type thing or something like that. They have some, occasionally they might get together when the teachers really feel they need it, maybe get together and have a hot chocolate right before they go to class or something like that. But basically no assembly. Go straight to class and get to work. And it's been going pretty good. And the students, you know, they miss that a little bit and hanging around with the other kids and stuff, but that's not what we're there for primarily. Sure, fellowship is part of Sunday school and needs to be a part of it, but it's not the not the only part of it. Yo.
That's one thing there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have directors, and what's their function and what you're doing?
The directors are more of people I communicate with. And where they might, my directors, like on these special events, I've let them choose what to do on those special event days and communicate with them. You know, look, y'all responsible. What are you going to do? You know, and they're the ones mainly are that responsible for that. And that's what the directors do. And when we do have the assembly times, one of the directors will take that. I have co-directors too, from two of the people that were with me last year. They kind of share the burden and working on it.
But they don't teach.
Yes, they're kind of a teacher director. Yeah.
They're two of the.
Yeah,
teachers.
Yeah, they're two of the teachers. There's really not that much for them to do, just directing. So they're just kind of a teacher director.
Do they keep records in their
clients? Yeah. Well, no, we kind of keep records. Well, yeah, that's what they do. Because they do it a little bit different way. I let them work out the record situation and how they do it. But, yeah, they take care of that right at first real quickly. And they have a secretary that collates and it takes it down there. So they don't have to be involved in that too much. That's been one of my bugaboos. I get all these radical teachers, you know, they don't want records. They don't want nothing like that. You know? So we almost lost graces with the powers that be because we weren't turning in the number of students and stuff like that. So anyway... no assembly. Evaluation, and I gave you an evaluation. This kind of evaluates the teachers and the material. That evaluation that's on there deals with the two teachers together. Now what I'm going to do this year, I'm going to write a new evaluation and evaluate each teacher individually. And then, after we do this, and we're going to do the evaluation in January, so we'll have some time to make some corrections as we go on. But what I hope to do is take the students' evaluations and collate that result, and then have the team, the two teachers, evaluate each other. And hopefully, we'll be a close enough community to where we can really be honest with each other. And share with each other what's wrong and what's right about each other. And so we haven't lost the whole year, and we can get in there and really help it. The evaluations were helpful in us analyzing. It's good enough. It's a valuable enough thing for us to go on into. It did teach us some things. Some lessons were too long. Some subjects were not totally, things like that. But otherwise been a valuable thing. No. No, we're going to do it just one time. At the end of, in January will be the end of the first trimester. And we have a whole hour session just set aside for evaluation. And we have this general evaluation, and we also have, I didn't bring them, but also like a final exam to see if they learned anything, to kind of let us see what they've learned. Which reminds me, another thing about this accountability. You ask about it, how we held our kids accountable. I told right now all we do is discuss the homework and check it. But there's no records. I've seriously thought about having some type of credit, an audit system. Not give them a diploma, get a financial or something like that. But have a commitment out of the kids to saying, look, I want to be serious about this trimester, about learning this material, and I want to be held accountable for it. And what we could do with those students, we can't keep them in the same classroom with those who don't make that commitment. But those that say they want to, then we'll check their homework. We'll maybe even assign grades. We'll send a note home a couple times during the trimester, at least at the end, of how well they did. And it could be just a little, report that Jim was attended three-fourths of the time, which is average for our students or good for our students. He entered well in the discussion. He worked hard on his homework.